From the heart of the Kootenays, this is the Friends of Kootenai Lake podcast series, Voices of the Lake.
A podcast that will keep you up to date on local events and opportunities relating to lake stewardship and recreation. We're your hosts, Kayla Tillipaw
and Joelle Burney,
broadcasting from the traditional territories of the Tanakha, the Sinaitchkst, the Shukhutmik, and Siuch First Nations.
We are so excited to introduce today's guest, Jay Blackmore, a sailor, diver, and member of a local sailing team known as the Kootenai Paddle Wheelers. Jay has found a love for sailing in the simple moments of connecting with nature's elements of wind and water. By either sailing on the surface or diving the bottom of Kootenai Lake, Jay has had the unique opportunity to connect with his local water body, which has led him to being an active and rock star volunteer for Focals. Jay has helped us pull bicycles and shopping carts out of the lake bed during our cleanups, install egg capsules as part of our shore spawning kokanee habitat restoration and research project, and continues to connect other local members to our work. We are so appreciative of Jay and his support, and we are excited for all of you to hear his passion and love for the lake.
In this episode, Jay shares his wild adventures of sailing on Kootenai Lake, his experience of living in a houseboat, and even throws in some adorable stories of what it's like having otters as neighbors. But what's most exciting about this episode is getting the inside scoop on what it's like training for the Race to Alaska, a 750-mile race from Port Townsend, Washington to Ketchikan, Alaska, on a boat with no motor.
The Kootenai Paddle Wheelers will be participating in this race in June and will also be hosting an event with Focals to gain support for their team and the lake.
You're listening to Past the Point of Talking by First After the Fire. You can check them out on Facebook and Spotify and explore their website at www.firstafterthefire.com. Thank you so much for the submission. We love featuring local musicians on our podcast, and we invite you to submit music too. You can hit up our website to apply.
I'm waiting for the stars to appear.
Let's dive in.
Well, thank you so much, Jay, for making the time to talk with us. You have some really big and exciting things on the go, and we're super excited to talk to you about them. I hear a little bit about you, first of all, and your story and how you got to where you are and all the really exciting things that are coming up. So Thanks so much.
You're welcome. Thank you. I appreciate being here.
Awesome. So to start off the podcast, we'd like to ask all of our guests kind of a fun question. So we are interested to know, what is one favorite memory you have on Kootenai Lake?
I think one that stands out was just how fast weather can move in. I was out sailing. We were doing a fun afternoon race and I had a young guy with me. He was 14 and it was just two of us on my boat. And the wind was picking up. We were right in front of Nelson and there were three boats doing just a fun race. And all of a sudden the weather just got crazy. I was up on the bow of the boat trying to get the sail up on the front end of the boat. And the 14-year-old boy that was on the tiller, he was holding the tiller while I was getting the sail down because things were getting crazy. He said, I see a water tornado. And I turned around and looked, and there was a water tornado. And it was probably, there's a house on the point there across from the marina, and this water spout was higher than the roof of that house. So I don't know, it had to have been probably, 30, 40 meters in height. A water spout. I'd never seen such a thing before.
What the heck?
And it got really crazy. And within, half an hour later, we'd been blown way far down the lake, but all was well. And we sailed back and it was sunny skies and calm again. So it's just crazy how fast in the mountains the weather get crazy and then drop away to being beautiful again.
Wow.
Yeah, no kidding. I've heard from Penny Caldwell, who you are familiar with. We had her on the podcast and she was telling us about the weather systems of Kootenai Lake and how it can just switch on a dime. And when you're sailing, you got to be just so prepared. Sounds crazy.
It does sound crazy.
So I'll go with the next one. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself? So, just let people know about your background and how you spend your days.
Well, I've lived in Nelson since 2007 and moved to Nelson for, you know, all the regular reasons. It was a great place to raise kids and schools and then all the outdoor activities that we all love. It's one of the few places I know of where we can go skiing and go sailing all within, you know, within an hour of each other on the same day, all season long, because it's an ice-free lake and relatively mild. So, you know, between skiing and sailing and mountain biking and hiking and all the things we love about this place where we live, all led me to want to live here and raise my family here. So that's what brought me to the area. And then I'm just really active in the local sailing community and schools, and you know, there's a lot of opportunities to get involved in community organizations and that in Nelson. So try to take advantage of that. I work in the construction industry, so I'm an independent contractor. So I stay busy with that. There's lots of activity and lots of work going on. So it's been a work that allows me some fair degree of freedom and latitude to pursue the things that I enjoy. So I appreciate that. That's probably one of the greatest things about it.
Nice.
Well, that's why we love you, Jay. For all of the listeners out there, Jay is like, he's one of our superstar volunteers. We have a handful of them. And, you know, he's utilizing his scuba diving skills to clean trash off the bottom of the lake and help us with kokanee, shore spawning kokanee research and things like that. And then also organizing events and things with us. So Jay's the best. I can vouch.
Thank you.
So Jay, what really sparked your love for sailing?
I just love the elements. You know, it's just so basic. You've got water, you've got wind, and you know, you can take this craft, whether it's small or large, and just with a minimal amount of, you know, technology, the hull and the sails, you put all of those, you know, really elemental parts together, and you just go. You know, it can be so quiet and peaceful. It's just a bug that, you know, I caught in my early 20s, and it's just a sickness that has not gotten better with time.
And it's a way to put it.
There's so many aspects to it that you can only just continue improving. And, you know, 70% of the planet is covered by water. So, you know, it just allows you to access and explore places that you'd never otherwise be able to get to. And, you know, you can constantly improve your skills. I love how sailing connects us to our history. So much of human history is linked to water and watercraft, exploration. So much of our language has nautical basis to it, history to it.
That's so true,
so many of our words, so many of our terms. There's just so much that links us to those that came before and our history that I find all of it just endlessly fascinating and appealing. And, you know, the opportunities to just continue learning and improving are really endless.
Nice. That's awesome.
Yeah. I'm not a sailor, but you make me want to be. Yeah. I've never thought about how it's like a multi-elemental craft, like water, air, not so much earth, but anyway, that's really cool. Yeah.
Well, it really forces you to pay attention to what's going on immediately around you. So like I said, with that first experience with that young guy and that water spout, you know, you have the weather, you know, and everything that goes into that. So, you know, the sun and clouds, wind, how the land around you influences the weather that's going on. So it really forces you to just pay attention and be aware of these elements that are going on around you. That's something I really appreciate. We've got, you know, our lives are so busy and so much technology and everything else going on around us. It's just a beautiful thing to be able to step away from some of that And, you know, and I'm as, you know, much a fan of technology as everyone else. And there's certainly a lot of that that can be incorporated mm-hmm. into sailing or yeah. as little as you want. And it can be as simple as a little dinghy and a sail and getting away from all of that. So
yeah,
there's plenty of opportunity on both ends of the spectrum to appreciate what's going on around you.
Yeah. Well, you're certainly a guy that's connected to the water. I mean, just even having spent a lot of your time living on a houseboat, on Kootenay Lake, how has that experience been for you?
It's been fabulous. It's been really, you know, I had an idea and a thought, of changing my lifestyle to better suit, you know, how I wanted my life to look like. You know, I did have a house and property in town, and I just found that I was being consumed by everything that it took to keep up with that. And it was taking up so much of my time, mm-hmm. keeping up with the yard, gardens, the house, cleaning, you know, I was just filling it up with stuff. And I just mm-hmm. wanted to do that. And I wanted to create a lifestyle that gave me more time rather than taking it away. And I had been walking the docks down in the lower mainland in North Vancouver, and was in a marina that had a small float home community. And I was looking at these float homes there, and I thought, I can do that. Like, why don't we have that in Nelson? You know, we have an ice-free, yeah. relatively mild climate. And so I started looking into it and decided that it was something that I'd be able to pull off. And so started drawing up plans, and you know, here we are now. I think I started the project in 2016 and have been living aboard for a couple of years now. And it's lovely. There's really nothing that I don't appreciate about it. It's mm-hmm. you know, it's a smaller home, and it forces me to be a little more conscious about consumables and you know, everything that you can fill it with, so or not, because it's smaller. Mm-hmm. And then one of the constraints of where I have it located in the marina in Nelson is that there's no power out there. So when I started the project, I needed to consider what kind of off-grid options I had for meeting the needs of power and heat and all of that. So it was an interesting project to learn about off-grid and solar options and batteries and everything that comes with that. And the information is all out there. I didn't have to reinvent anything, but it did provide opportunities to learn and explore options for meeting.
Cool. That is such an interesting way of living. Like, it's almost like a tiny house just on the water.
Yeah, exactly.
I did build a tiny house a few years back and lived in it for a short time and then sold it to a person. And so the tiny house was really fun to do and was interesting. And it truly was a really tiny house. It was, I built it. It was the largest you can build without a building permit. So it was 10 square meters, which was compact. Yeah, it was. So I knew that I wanted something a little larger than a tiny house, but I also didn't need a huge footprint. So I ended up drawing a house that has about 700 square feet of heated indoor living space. And I found that to be more than adequate. It's a perfect size. I have a kitchen that I can do everything with. I can entertain. I have friends over. I've got a little bit of room for storage and projects and that, and a couple of very comfortable bedrooms. And I found that space, it's very economical for me to, you know, heat it and have services throughout the year. So it's freed up my resources to pursue other interests that I have.
Wow. That's so awesome. And you get the benefits of the otters.
Oh yeah, the otters.
I have lots of friends between the otters that come and leave me their gifts and the ducks. And I mean, just yesterday morning, I headed out of town early and had my raven friend that was there on the deck.
Oh, nice.
That comes frequently. And, you know, there's all sorts of ducks and different waterfowl that are there depending on which time of the year and the migration routes and that. So I do enjoy and appreciate that part of it as well.
Yeah. I don't want to take up too much time, but can you quickly just tell me about the otter dance?
And you know, it's great. I take the otters as a sign of you know, that the lake is healthy and the ecosystem, you know, something is going right, because these guys are pretty fat and sassy and looking good and everything. So I've got a group of otters. There's probably 4 to 6 of them. And from what I understand, I've done some reading in that, is they're probably mostly males, or all males. And the males communicate by leaving their droppings. They poo in places, and it's a form of communication. I think it's a way for them to say, you know, hey, I'm here, and I'm healthy, and I'm looking for a mate, and you know, and that's the way they communicate. So I have a couple of doormats at the float home. One is rubber, and 2 are hemp. They're natural fiber. And the otters, for some reason, really like to rub their backs and their bellies on the rubber doormat. But the hemp doormats, they roll them up, they flip them over, and they do their squat, and they lift their tail up in the air, and their back legs pad up and down, and they wiggle their butt, and then they leave their message.
Nice.
Sometimes they leave a lot of messages for me. And it's a little messy. And luckily, when I built the float home, I put an outdoor spigot, an outdoor hose bib on there. And so I have a hose nearby that's handy that I can wash them off with quickly before it turns into otter cement in the sunshine.
Oh, gosh. Oh man.
So I take it as I appreciate that they feel safe enough around the dock and the float home there to come and visit frequently, and they leave their messages, and I don't find it too frustrating. And there's just the odd times where I'm there and I spot them, and I can look out the window, and I can take pictures or video of them, and they don't notice me because they're so preoccupied with wrestling and playing. And then all of a sudden they'll look up, and there I am 4 feet away, you know, with my phone, you know, videotaping them, and they look up and they pause for a second, and then they're like, ah, and they skedaddle.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so wonderful.
It's fun. Yeah.
Cool. Awesome. Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about the Kootenai Paddle Wheelers, because you're part of that team. Do you want to share a little bit about who the Kootenai Paddle Wheelers are and how you formed?
Okay. So in 2015, an organization in Port Townsend, Washington, the Northwest Maritime Center, a couple of guys were having a beer or 2 or 3. And they were talking about, you know, how yacht racing, sailboat racing is often a very exclusive sport. It's tends to be very, you know, financially intensive and require, you know, high degrees of skill and training and that. And it tends to be not something that the every person can get into. And they came up with a plan to host a race that would be more open and inclusive. And so they came up with a plan to host a race called the Race to Alaska, which would go from Port Townsend, Washington, up the Inside Passage of British Columbia to Ketchikan, Alaska, which is 750 miles. And often boat racing has a lot of rules, a lot of arcane, very obscure rules that it takes a fair amount of study to become familiar with. They wanted to eliminate that. So they got it down to 2 rules. Rule number 1 is no outside support. So you can't have like food drops, or you can't have teams meeting you along the way to provide support. The second rule was no motors. So no engines, no infernal combustion motors of any kind. So they wanted this to be a human or wind powered or elemental powered race. So it started in 2015, the race has garnered a lot of attention and a lot of supporters worldwide. And it's kind of a gonzo race that's open to everything. From it's been completed by people on stand-up paddleboards. It's been done by teenagers in rowboats. It's been done by family members in small boats. It's been done in small 20-foot sailboats that you can buy for a couple thousand dollars. And it's been all the way up to, you know, fairly high-end racing yachts that participated in this. So it's open as long as you can meet, you know, minimum safety requirements and prove to the organizing committee that you've got the skills to take on what can be really treacherous waters in a really sparsely populated coastline that can be really wild. If you prove to them that, you know, you've got the skills and the capability and the safety equipment to be unsupported and take care of yourself, then they're, you know, you're in. So a few years ago, I guess spring, it was, well, it was winter of 2019. We were out for a winter sail on Kootenai Lake. And one of our friends, Roger, sent an email out that evening and said, you know, hey, I've been thinking about this race to Alaska. You know, you think anybody else would be interested? And within a week, we were looking for a boat. And we had a team put together. We named ourselves the Kootenai Pedal Wheelers. We wanted to reflect the region of BC that we're from, the Kootenays. And then also Kootenai Lake, where we sail and practice, has a long, rich nautical history on it. One of which being the paddle wheelers that plied the lake. They would move fruit and goods and that up and down the lake under steam power, you know, a century or century and a half ago. So because we're a non-motorized boat, we have built pedal drives where we can actually hop on these bicycles, but instead of turning wheels, they turn propellers if there's no wind. So to reflect that nautical history, we came up with the name Kootenai Pedal Wheelers. So so we bought the boat and we're prepared to go for the 2020 race. We gave ourselves a year to get ready, and then COVID hit, and the race to Alaska was canceled for 2020, and it was canceled for 2021. And so here we are, what we thought was going to be a one-year project we've been into for 3 years now. And the race is on for this coming June 13th, 2022. So it's finally happening.
Nice.
Wow. Yeah. The moment you've all been waiting for is like coming up so quick. I can't believe it's already the middle of May.
Yeah.
Oh, I've just dated this episode. Whoops. That's okay. So tell me more about the event. What exactly are the people, the participants, the racers, what exactly are they doing? What is that experience like?
So the end goal is to survive and get to the end of the race, the finish line, which is Ketchikan, Alaska. So in the past runnings of the race, I believe it's been run 5 times. They've had an attrition rate that's approached 50%. So a lot of boats, for whatever reason, whether it's adverse weather or gear or exhaustion, they drop out along the way. So just finishing the race alone is an accomplishment. Outside of that, you know, I think everyone obviously is looking for a sense of adventure. The race organizers do a really great job of encouraging a lot of community and camaraderie between the teams. So I think that's something that everyone really appreciates as well, is the sense of community that comes along with this race. So those are all parts that go into why, you know, people want to do this, the sense of accomplishment, the adventure, the camaraderie, the community. And that definitely are all parts of that are what have led us to get involved with this as well. I think we're approaching somewhere near 40 teams that are approved to enter the race this year. In the past events, they've had 2 waypoints or checkpoints that you have to go by. One is Seymour Narrows, which is a set of rapids, a narrow bottleneck on the race course, which is just north of Campbell River. And then the second is the community of Bella Bella. You have to go inside some islands and you have to go past the community of Bella Bella. In order to finish the race, you have to go by those 2 waypoints. This year, they've dropped one of those waypoints. They've dropped the Seymour Narrow waypoint. So now there is only 1 waypoint. So there's 2 rules and 1 waypoint on the entire race course. What that has opened up is the opportunity to go outside Vancouver Island. There's 2 parts to the race. There's the part 1 is the proving ground. So the race departs on 5 a.m. on June 13th from Port Townsend, and leg one goes to Victoria. So you have to cross the Strait of Juan de Fuca, and they give the racers 48 hours to get across. And if it's really howling in the Strait of Juan de Fuca and really blowing and boats can't get across, then they're out of the race.
Oh, wow.
So 3 days later, on June 16th, they have a second start to the race. It's a Le Mans start, so everyone's up on shore, and they ring a bell, and everyone goes running down to their boats, and then you have to pedal or paddle or walk on water to get out of Victoria Inner Harbor because there's no sailing allowed. And then once you depart Victoria, we now have an option of either turning left and going up the inside passage, which comes with lots of currents, lots of tides, lots of fickle wind or no wind, or, which has never happened in this race before, is turning right and going up the outside in the open Pacific, up the outside of Vancouver Island. So for the boats that are opting or leaving the option open of going up the Pacific, they have to meet certain minimum Coast Guard safety requirements as far as the safety gear that their boats have. And their boats have to be certified as worthy of going out into the open Pacific. And they will be having an inspection and certifying the boats that are wanting to go up the outside.
Wow. Did you guys decide what you're doing?
We have left open the option of going up the outside, and we've prepared our boat with that. We have a life raft, and we have all the safety gear as far as emergency beacons, life vests, all the tethers and radios and the other gear that are required for going up the outside. So we've left it as an option. Our boat is a fairly lightweight sport boat, they're called. So it's a Flying Tiger 10 meter. So it's a 10 meter, 33 foot long sailboat. That's really, it's a lightweight boat with a big rig. So it has a lot of horsepower, is an equivalent way of thinking about it, on a very light frame. So think of like the equivalent of a sports car that can go fast, but it needs to go fast, you know, in certain conditions. So those conditions being, you know, not huge breaking waves and that kind of thing. We need a bit of flatter water that with a fair amount of wind. So the conditions will need to be optimal for us to go up the outside. So we'll be watching right down to basically right before the start of the race. And if the conditions are such that we feel really confident that our safety won't be compromised and we can benefit from going up the outside and avoiding the currents and fickle winds and tidal channels and all of that, then we'll leave that option of going up the outside open to ourselves.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Cool. All right. There's just so many, yeah, different things involved in this race. So many elements that you'll have to endure. Like, how do you even prepare for a race like this? Like, what did the last 3 years look like preparing for this race?
Well, when the race was canceled, when COVID hit in March of 2020, and it wasn't too long after that that they pulled the plug on the 2020 race, we were bummed. We isolated like everyone else, and we didn't go sailing. We didn't go out as a crew. We felt like we were fairly well prepared to go. So as we got into May and COVID restrictions started lifting some, we started thinking about what we could do as a consolation to not doing the race to Alaska. And what we decided we could do was that we could, as a team, have our team as our bubble, and that we could do a nonstop circumnavigation of Vancouver Island, which is about a 600, 650 mile lap around Vancouver Island. And we figured because we could launch the boat ourselves on its trailer, we wouldn't have to interact with anyone else at our launch site, and that we could provision the boat and we could do basically a nonstop lap around Vancouver Island where we wouldn't have to stop in any communities. So we did that in 2020. At the morning of, I believe it was June 7th, which was supposed to be the start of the 2020 race, we departed out of Bowen Island just off the coast of Vancouver. And we did a circumnavigation of Vancouver Island. It took us 7 days, and we went all the way around and around Cape Scott at the north end and down the Pacific side. Went 24/7. And it was an probably the best thing we could have done as far as preparing for the actual R2AK. We realized where our weaknesses were. We realized where our gear was inadequate. We realized we gained a lot of knowledge as far as food preparation and rest, getting proper amounts of rest and having adequate bunks and facilities to try and dry out our gear. It really made us aware of how much energy is involved with pedaling the boat for hours on end when there's no wind, and what our physical condition was going to need to be in order to pull that off. So doing that circumnavigation really, really prepared us for doing the race to Alaska this year. And we've made significant improvements to the boat, to ourselves, to our training schedules, all of that. So on top of, you know, our regular meetings and our regular racing and sailing and preparing on Kootenai Lake, those are what we've engaged in to prepare for Race to Alaska.
Nice.
Wow. That's smart of you guys. That sounds really cool. Awesome experience. And now I feel so confident that you guys are going to be number one. I'll be with the foam finger at the tip of the island. Go. Yeah.
I think, you know, we want to do this race to win. We also want to do the race to just complete it. And
Totally, and
it's been a real privilege and a real pleasure to be involved with this project with mm-hmm. five other really great guys, six if you include our team manager, and then, you know, also the support of our friends and families and community and that. So it's been fabulous being part of that. But, you know, so, you know, we'd like to think that we at least have a shot at winning. Now, what that shot is, there are so many variables on this race, you know, the weather, the wind, the currents, boats have hit logs before. There's a lot of, you know, the rivers that empty into the inside passage and that bring a lot of material down in mm-hmm. the springtime. So there yeah. are logs, we're racing at night. That's part of it. And, you know, the boats have had to put into communities and perform repairs on their boats. Boats that were in the lead and projected to win have run into these kind of problems. So gear failures, all that kind of thing. So it's a real roll of the dice. Tactically, you know, there's so many variables with the mountains and the islands and the winds. You know, you can be, you know, a short distance away from another boat and be in two different winds, and, you know, one boat can take off and the other one is sitting in a parking lot, basically. So there's so many variables that that's one of the great things about this race, is that there's those that are doing it in slower craft that are doing it just to complete the race. And then there's a handful of boats that are all performance boats, and I think all have a really good shot of being first one across the finish line.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And how are the nerves feeling being a month away? How are you feeling internally?
I feel good. I think we're all really busy. There's a huge amount of work, just logistics and the final preparations and getting our meals planned and ready, and having all the right gear, from our personal gear for keeping dry and warm, up to sails and safety gear on the boat, having everything ready. There's a 1,001 minor details that all have to be checked off. So it's great being part of a crew that where everyone's taking on equal amounts of responsibility for getting all of these details taken care of. So that's coming up. So it feels it just feels busy with everything that needs to go on to pull this off. But I think we're all eager. We're eager to see it happen. It's been a project 3 years in the making. So we're really looking forward to the culmination of it all.
Awesome.
Yeah. So a couple of months ago, Jay, you reached out to Friends of Kootenai Lake proposing to run a fundraiser for Friends of Kootenai Lake that will generate excitement about the Race to Alaska, as well as support the work of Friends of Kootenai Lake in protecting the health and stewardship of the lake. So do you want to tell us a little bit about this event?
Sure. Well, there's a couple of things we'd like to do. So you know, we all live in Nelson and sail on Kootenai Lake, and we all, you know, enjoy the benefits of having the lake and the beauty of it, and it, you know. So we want to give back to the lake that we sail and train on. So Friends of Kootenai Lake was an obvious choice for us as a local nonprofit stewardship organization that does all sorts of good work with the lake, whether it's the work you guys do with supporting kokanee habitat and osprey monitoring and the fisheries and beach cleanups and all those good things. So we wanted to give back. So the Race to Alaska has two prizes. If the first place winner, and it really is just the first boat across the finish line, wins $10,000 US. So they've got a stack of $100 bills, or maybe it's $20 bills, that are nailed to spiked to a chunk of driftwood. And that gets handed over to the first place winners. Second place winners get a set of steak knives. And there are no other prizes.
I love that. I love just the whole phrase of that. There are no other prizes.
It's almost cruel, but hilarious.
Yeah.
You know, there are some really high performance boats and some really top end, top notch sailors that are participating in the race this year. So I think, you know, we as the Kootenai Pedal Wheelers have a chance of winning, and so much of it is just such a toss up and so many variables. So there's a chance. If in that small chance that we win, we'd like to donate the full $10,000 US to Friends of Kootenai Lake. We'd be happy to do that. Mm-hmm. If we win the set of steak knives, sorry, we're keeping those.
That's fair.
Are you guys going to
split? Steak knives and six crew. I know. I don't know what the other guys will do, but I know that I'll get mine gold plated and professionally mounted in a frame, and it will sit in a prominent place in my home.
Oh my God. That's so perfect. I was going to ask you, are you going to split them up or?
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know about the rest of them. I know I'll be stealing mine. So.
That's so great. And you know, that offer to provide the prize to Friends of Kootenai Lake is just so wonderful. It just goes to show, you know, like how active the pedal wheelers are as kind of contributing to the well-being of their communities. And I know that you and a lot of these guys also are active in like participating in these cleanups and getting derelict boats off the lake. So these are just for everyone out there. This is a real stand-up crew, and they care a lot about their lake, and we all need to cheer them on.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. We appreciate the support. So the other thing that came up was a couple of years ago, the Race to Alaska as an organization does a really good job of supporting the teams, and they do a really good job of promoting the race online, social media, YouTube, that type of thing. So the fellow that runs the race is known, Daniel Evans. He's known as the race boss. And then they have their race marshal, and they have another fellow, Zach Carver. He's known as the film boss. And he's, over the years that the race has run, they have boats that traverse the inside passage while the race is going on, and they do filming of teams on shore prior to and after the race and during the race. And they put together some really great videos on YouTube for folks and family members and supporters of the race to follow along. So Zach Carver has compiled all this footage, and he's produced a movie, a full-length documentary called Race to Alaska. And it was released last year and has been showing at any number of music or of film festivals and online screenings. And anyway, so we reached out to Zach and the committee, the race committee at Race R2AK headquarters. And we floated the idea of screening that movie. We've seen it when it was first released online. And we asked about the possibility of screening that movie in Nelson. We'd like to generate some local community support for our endeavor as a team. And then we thought that it could be a great way to have a fundraiser for Friends of Kootenai Lake. So with the help of yourselves, we've all collaborated, and with the help of Zach and his crew. So on June 1st, we're bringing The Race to Alaska, the movie, to Civic Theater in Nelson. And hopefully we're going to fill the theater, and 100% of the proceeds will go to Friends of Kootenai Lake. So if we don't win the $10,000 first prize, at least there's some benefit financially for the organization that will go towards the good deeds that you do on the lake.
Yeah, that's awesome.
You guys are seriously the best. So yeah, come on, come all. June 1st at 7 p.m. Tickets have just gone live. You can purchase your tickets online at the Civic Theater website. Check our social media. We'll be sharing links. And check out the trailers on YouTube. I have seen one of the trailers and it's absolutely hilarious. I'm so excited to see this movie. You don't want to miss out.
Zach and his crew have done a really great job. I've seen the movie, and it's funny. It's poignant. It's, you know, you've got the crews are of the teams that have raced in the past are really amazing. You've got groups of teenagers that are doing this in some really crazy craft. You've got a group of eight women that were the first to ever win in a monohull, a completely unsupported all women team that just absolutely rocked the race. You've got, you know, groups of Alaska, you know, a team of Alaska fishermen that had never gone sailing before this race. They taught themselves how to sail. They got themselves a boat that could perform, and they've won, you know.
So
it's inspiring. It's, you know, it's not just a movie about sailing. It's really, you know, human inspiration and perseverance and, you know, against all sorts of odds. And so it's definitely a movie. You don't have to have any knowledge about sailing or racing to find inspiration and appeal in this movie. It's often humorous, sometimes a little freaky. It has a lot to offer everyone, and I would really encourage folks to come out and support Friends of Kootenai Lake. And you know, hopefully we're going to generate a little bit of interest in our efforts to participate in the race. So I would really encourage the whole community to come out and see the movie. One thing that the race committee does is each boat is given a satellite tracker, and we have to keep that satellite tracker on at all times. So the Race to Alaska website has a live feed for the entire duration of the race. And so you can follow the race live 24/7 as the boats are proceeding.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so there's a community of folks literally around the world, and they're known as tracker junkies. And you can go to the R2AK website and buy t-shirts to show that you're a tracker junkie, and folks follow live. So we're hoping to generate some support and interest, so folks will want to follow along and see how we're doing. It's really crazy that, you know, there have been instances after 750 miles of racing, pedaling, adverse winds, currents, everything else, at the finish line, it's been more than once where mere minutes have been the determining factor between first and second place.
Wow.
Where boats coming down the channel into Ketchikan are literally crossing tacks as they're coming down to the finish line, and these boats can yell and holler at each other as after 750 miles. So it can be a real nail biter right down to the finish. Where you've got multiple boats coming in after being all spread out across all sorts of the BC coastline there, and then they converge at the end, and they're just minutes apart. So it can provide some real interest for those following along from home.
Cool, that's awesome. And there's also a neat component too to the film screening, right? There's a Q&A that's going to be happening as well.
We've got a lot of support. So there's been a number of businesses in town have provided items for prizes that will be either auctioned off or given out to folks that come to the screening. And then we've got Zach Carver, who's the director of the movie, is going to join us at the end of the screening for a Q&A session, Jamie Moy, who is a local writer, she's quite an accomplished writer. She's written for Outside Magazine, National Geographic, Condé Nast. She's an adventure writer. Jamie has kindly volunteered to step forward and facilitate a question and answer session with Zach, who made the movie and has been along for every single one of the R2K races that have been run prior. And then I think we'll also be there to introduce ourselves as a team and answer any questions that folks may have about our efforts.
Yeah, come and meet the pedal wheelers before they're world famous.
I know. I need to meet all the other members of the pedal wheelers.
Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful group of guys that are, you know, are really supportive and have a wide range of skills. And I feel really privileged to be there among them. And I'm looking forward to spending that time with them and just seeing this whole endeavor through to completion.
Mm-hmm. And we're so excited to watch you guys just kill it. Mm-hmm. It's going to be so sweet.
Yeah,
that's great. I know we've reached the end of our questions, but I did have one question that we wanted to ask you. It didn't really fit in anywhere. So now that we're at the end, I'm just going to ask because I want to know. So being a diver, recreational diver on Kootenai Lake, you've seen some stuff on the bottom of the lake. I just want to know what's the craziest thing you've seen, or like what weird things are on the bottom of the lake that people don't know about?
You know, the depth and range of my diving experience is fairly limited. It's only been the past number of years that I've done that. I'm actually the friends that I'm visiting with now are the folks that taught me to dive, and they're incredibly accomplished divers. I'm grateful for having had opportunities to go in some amazing places diving with them. I know that we've found rifles underneath the bridge, like wow, from a long time ago, like decades and decades. You know, it's pretty crazy off of John's Walk where the mill used to be. Mm-hmm. There is just, it's like pickup sticks down there with sunken logs and steel and cables, mm-hmm, and stuff that's left over from when the mill was on that part of the shoreline in town. Farther down, from like off the airport, where back, you know, in the 1890s and early 1900s, the lakeshore was used as a dump. And you can now find lots of like old pharmacy bottles and medicine, mm-hmm, bottles and things like that from, you know, the late 1800s and early 1900s. Those are often desirable by collectors. Mm-hmm. Underneath the Big Orange Bridge, which is a prominent feature in Nelson, there's an old stern steam tug that's sunk in about 80 feet of water. Wow. That's sitting down at the bottom, and it's pristine. All the decks and planking, it's all built of wood. Wow. The boiler is down there. So it's a curiosity that it's actually a geocache location.
What? That's crazy. You
know, those that like geocaching, it's a bit of a frustration because it's 80 feet below the surface.
Oh my goodness.
People are standing on top of the bridge like, where is it?
yeah. So it's somewhat limited as to those who can access that. So it hasn't happened to myself, but I know a friend of mine, Bruce, that I dive with, has looked over his shoulder and had a big sturgeon staring him in the face.
Whoa.
Wow.
Which is pretty special that not everybody gets to experience. Mm-hmm.
And shout out to Bruce. He's been a superstar volunteer right alongside Jay, helping with, mm-hmm, the diving and all else.
Yeah, Bruce is fabulous, and he's really safety conscious, which makes it appealing for me to dive with him. And also, you know, really enthusiastic and always eager to help out with a big smile on his face. So he's definitely a rock star.
Yes. Nice. Yes, he is, as are you. Great. Well, we've reached the end. Joelle, did you have any wrap-up questions before we close her up?
No, I think I'm good.
Okay. Well, oh my goodness. Well, thank you so much, Jay. This has been great. Mm-hmm. Every time we talk about pedal wheelers and the race, I get super excited, and the clock is ticking down, and we got some really, mm-hmm, great things to look forward to. So we're going to try and share this news with everyone as soon as we can.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Well, it's awesome. Well, thank you guys for the opportunity and thank you for all your help and working with us to get the word out here. We'll look forward to continuing collaborating with Friends of Kootenai Lake in the future.
Great. Yeah. Awesome. So thanks to you and to the whole team for all that you do to help protect the stewardship of Kootenai Lake. You guys are amazing. Shout out.
Good luck.
Shout out to the whole team.
It's much appreciated. So, all right. Well, thank you. Yeah.
All right. Awesome. Thanks for tuning in to Voices of the Lake. Stay updated on what we've been up to. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Friends of Kootenai Lake. Read our blog posts at friendsofkootenailake.ca and sign up to our monthly e-newsletter.
Huge thanks to our funders, Fortis BC and the Regional District of Central Kootenays, for helping us bring these stories to you.
Again, you're listening to Past the Point of Talking by First After the Fire. Check them out on their website, firstafterthefire.com, Facebook, or Spotify. Thanks so much, First After the Fire.
There's water spilling through that dam.